Tonight on Life on the Rock, we have Rachel Hoover Canto, part two. I'll give a reflection and much more. Welcome to Life on the Rock. Tonight, our guest is Rachel Hoover Canto. She's written a book, Pretty Good Catholic, How to Find, Date, and Marry Someone Who Shares Your Faith.
And this is the second show with her, and we're now going to a reflection with Father Mark.
Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man conceived, what God has prepared for those who love him. He's speaking of heaven. We can't even conceive it. I'm here at the ruins of the ancient city of Corinth, and behind me is the temple, the ruins of the temple of Apollos. And he would have seen this temple when he was here and proclaiming the gospel. And Apollos was a god of the sun. He was in charge of carrying the sun every day, you know, across the sky. So a significant guy, god for them. And he's here. You think about Jesus as the light of the world. He gives us the light of glory, this light of a heavenly light, the true heavenly light. But we can't even imagine, no eye has seen or ear heard. Let's keep that in view. And Paul was so impressed with his zeal to spread this good news that he says, woe to me if I don't preach the gospel. Woe to me. That he had this encounter with Christ. He has this responsibility, this obligation, and this mission because he is an apostle to proclaim this gospel. He'd also say in 1 Corinthians that we are running in a race. We could say, he says, run so as to complete the finish. Run so as to win. Put everything you got into it. Put your heart into it. We're headed for heaven. You know, make this real effort with his grace that we can achieve holiness by his Spirit. It's a question that poses to us today. Are we going to run? Are we going to jog? Are we going to run so as to win? Run to win. May we be faithful to the gospel. Well, Rachel, welcome back to Life on the Rock.
Thanks for having me back.
This is our second show, and we're going through your book, Pretty Good Catholic, How to Find, Date, and Marry Someone Who Shares the Faith. And talking about different issues, we ended last show talking about this default to yes. You know, we have to cooperate with God's grace, right? It's, you know, we just don't sit home and pray for to meet a person, right? Unless you're going to marry the mailman or something, they say. But we have to do our part. And I think so often we're kind of hesitant to take action, to take the step, you know, and to move forward. And I challenge guys on this too, that as you write in the book, you know, to simply, you're at some kind of event, it might be a church event or some kind of group of singles, just to introduce yourself and have a conversation, you know, just begin with a conversation. And you have some pretty, a matchmaker you interviewed talked about in 10 minutes, ask him out or not, right? If there's no huge red flags or something, but yeah. You know, maybe in a public space, maybe in a safe way, you know, that's, but I kind of like that because, you know, to get out, test the waters, you know, meet people, and you probably with each date, you're learning more and more, maybe what you want, what you're looking for.
Yes, exactly. This is Christina Pineda, this expert matchmaker I got to interview, and she says, within 10 minutes, you can tell if you have just that little spark of interest, that's enough to go and have a drink and just chat for an hour or two. That's all a first date really needs to be. And then that first date tells you, okay, is there enough potential here to go on a second? So it should be a step-by-step process. Sometimes we kind of dive straight into the deep end, or we're afraid of diving into the deep end, so we just don't do anything. Yeah. And I advocate a little more of a gradual wading in.
Yeah, I like that idea too, maybe going out, maybe in some groups, you kind of talk more intently with a particular person, or like you said, just grab a cup of coffee. There's no pressure, it's public, it's not risky really or anything like that. And but you have to be careful in today's world. You know, there's some bad players out there, so you don't want to be foolish. And sometimes you hear women talk about, well, I don't want to lead them on. And you quote this, Pineda, she says, as long as there's a question mark, you're not leading him on. I thought that was a good distinction to make.
Yes. She's essentially saying, if the answer to should I go on another date with him or not, if the answer is maybe, then you should go ahead and default to yes, as we were talking about default to yes last time, because otherwise you're not really giving him enough of a chance. You don't. It means you need more information to make your decision. But once you're really leaning toward no, or if you just feel like, I just really don't want to go on another date with him, or you have some concrete reason, we're not aligned, then of course you say no right then and there. Maybe even proactively, you know, have a kind conversation. Like, thank you for your time. Thank you for these dates we've been on, but I just don't see this going further. It can be that simple. And that way you're not leading him on, because once you know the answer is no, you told him, and that's all he can ask, really.
And you have a great story with your husband that it wasn't love at first sight, right? It took... What happened?
So he was interested in me when he first saw me. We were at a birthday party for a mutual friend where everybody was dressed up really nice. And, it, you know, I guess I caught his eye, and he was sitting next to me at the table and just making small talk, you know, very, very normal, innocent stuff. And I looked at this guy. I mean, he has earrings, he has tattoos, just, you know, much more lively, kind of energetic personality than mine. And I thought, this guy is not my type at all. And so I kind of... I thought I was being polite, but sort of distant. And he says, right. I just put a wall up. Like, he can see it go, you know? And so he's like, okay. And then at some point I left the table and went off to talk to some other people. Yeah. And all the others at the table were like, what did you say, man? Like, did she shut you down? But he very gently tried again, you know? So he ran into me at a couple other events. I was actually running singles events for Catholics in our city at that time. So he showed up to some of those. We did a speed dating event. And by then my mindset had changed. God had really opened my heart, and I decided I'm going to default to yes at this speed dating event. I'm going to say that I'm open to a date with any of the guys unless I have a definite reason to say no. Mm-hmm. So he ended up being one of them. We went on a first date, and I found out we had a lot more in common than I thought, and he was really a good fit for me. So within just a few dates, it was clear that this was going to go the distance. That's my personal experience with needing to set aside those preferences a little bit, default to yes, and then God was able to do something really good out of that.
Because you write about, too, how oftentimes a woman's attraction develops over time. You know, it's not guys kind of more visual driven and stuff, and the way that part kind of heavy, I guess. But do you talk about the one? Some people have this, there's this one out there for me. I've heard a lot of actually Protestant books and things talk about there's not just the one, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way I see it too, is like you feel called to the vocation of marriage, there's many possibilities out there to make that work with, you know, and part of the question is to be open, right, to who God is sending to you. So we're talking about making all this effort, but also to have some faith and trust in God, right?
Mm-hmm. As one of my friends put it long ago, you're probably called to marry someone that you're going to meet. You know, it's not somebody who's in, the Pacific Islands somewhere, and you live in the U.S. and you're never going to cross paths. So God is going to lead people into your life, and then the cooperation is being open to the real people that are in front of you rather than waiting until you find the person that fits your mental list, who may not exist. And I think it's difficult too, because looking back on my relationship with my husband, I can say, well, it looks like God planned this all along.
Right.
And maybe in a way he did, but he planned it alongside our individual choices and our free will. So it all works together. If I can share a quick story that back in the 2017, right after I graduated from college, I prayed the novena to Our Lady Undoer of Knots. She's kind of known for interceding for relationship difficulties and things like that. And I was asking for my future husband. And I met someone in the middle of that novena and thought, this is it, great, answer to prayer. And then it didn't work out. But years later, once I was already engaged to my husband, we were just chatting, and come to find out, he had spent some time away from his faith, and he had started to come back to his faith during that exact novena in 2017.
Oh, wow.
And so in a way, my novena was exactly answered, but it was answered in this long roundabout way that I couldn't see until years later. So I freely chose to say yes to his proposal. We were going to get married. I had forgotten about the novena. And yet it looks like God was actually working with that all along. So it's really a combination.
Yeah,
I don't know how to explain that.
But that's beautiful. What about, I know a lot of women that have gotten older now, they're frustrated. You know, has God forgotten me?
What do you tell them?
That's so hard. Mm-hmm. First of all, I mean, God does not forget anyone. It's easy to say that, mm-hmm. but it can feel that way, right? I do know some people who are, they didn't get married until a little later in life, maybe late 30s, maybe 40s, maybe even older. And they all say, looking back on everything I went through, it was worth it to meet this person and marry this person at this time,
right.
because otherwise it just wouldn't have worked out. And I think it's so, so hard when you're in the midst of it. It sounds lofty, but I compare it to our Lord when he was going through the agony in the garden and all the sufferings of the cross. Yeah. He was feeling all the weight and all the difficulty in the moment, but his resurrection made all of it worth it, right? And he still had his wounds, but the wounds were glorified. And that's what it's like when you do finally get into the vocation God has called you to, you marry the person that really is the best fit for you. You can look back and say, all those previous breakups and difficulties that I went through were slowly but surely kind of nudging me in the right direction. And so it's all worth it now, because I wouldn't have learned all those things, and I wouldn't have, you know, if I had not been broken up with by so-and-so back then, if I had married him, right. then he wouldn't have been as good for me as the husband I have now. So it's hard, but I think keeping that hope and just realizing that as long as you are staying faithful to God and open to his will, whatever he does in your life is going to be so much better than whatever you can imagine right now, or whatever the thing is that you're kind of clinging to right now. Right.
That's a good point. Well, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Rachel Hoover Canto in just a moment. Rachel, you write about, too, looking about this whole process as a path that we're to work on ourselves during the whole thing. So it's not just like we're waiting to finally live life, engage or whatever.
Right.
But talk about that, rather than just finding a spouse, but also working on ourselves in the process.
Yes, during those single years, now that I'm married and I have a young son, I realize when I was single was the easiest time to go to daily mass or go on a pilgrimage or do mission work or go to adoration regularly, all those things that really help you strengthen your faith, as well as just any hobbies or interests, any talents that God has planted in you. It's a great time to develop all of them. And that helps you just be happy and fulfilled in the now during the single years. And then also if and when you do find that person to date and ultimately to marry, there's more chance that you have overlapping interests with them. You've grown a lot. Maybe you've grown in your faith, your communication skills, or just the ability to have fun and joy. You know, that's really attractive to people when you have interests and hobbies. And so it's a good time to work on all of those things and really delve into them, and then not be too focused on just, I have to find a spouse, but still, reserving that spot in your mind, and maybe someone is going to come and join my life. And you don't need to tamp down on that desire. I think it's good to lean into your desire for a spouse, but also lean into all the other desires and interests that you have and just be a well-rounded person.
Right. And some of the work on ourselves too is, and I'd say this to men, it's like, you know, to be responsible, to develop the career, maybe to get the education piece. Because if you're gonna be the father of a family, you know, you're called to provide for and to work and stuff like that. So, and that's attractive to women, right? Mm-hmm. We grow in confidence when we do that. When we live responsibly, we have a confidence that's attractive to women, and applying ourselves and growing. And you write in the book too about, I guess, some reports or whatever statistics, like, shocker, but men are attracted to feminine women, right? And we've had, I think in our culture today, we have kind of a feminization of men, a masculinization of women to some degree, but we're still attracted to the other, the mysterious, you know, something that's different than we are, right? So there's an aspect of both have to grow in their masculinity and women in their femininity. What would you tell the women on that?
I don't want to say that there's a cookie cutter look or something that means you look feminine, because you don't want to be fake. If frilly dresses really aren't your thing, then don't fake it, you know? But I do think that when men say, I like a feminine woman, they just mean, she shouldn't look like she's hiding the beauty that she has. You know, it's okay to accentuate your feminine beauty and try to be comfortable in your female body and in a modest and appropriate way, kind of show the beauty that God gave you. So oftentimes men will mention things like, oh, I do like long hair, you know, mm-hmm. or I do like when women wear dresses, it's mm-hmm. so pretty. And so maybe those are things to keep in mind. Maybe if you're, yeah. if you're going on a yeah. date and you have a choice between the pants and the skirt, maybe go with the skirt, you know, but it doesn't have to be, exactly the same for everyone. Right, so the man who loves you will also find you to be beautiful and attractive. Yeah. So, but those are just something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. You know, am I hiding the femaleness of myself for some reason? Is there maybe some discomfort there? Maybe I need to even go to counseling and kind of wrestle with that and figure out, was there a wound? Because sometimes that can be the reason why women are kind of hiding themselves, and mm-hmm. men too. So working through that and just, show what God has given you. That's what I would really say.
And you did a great chapter on chastity. I took note of it too, because as a priest, you know, you get asked these questions, but chastity and dating, and I think you really make some great distinctions, because there's a full spectrum, right, of this unrealistic, inhuman approach of you can't hold hands, you can't do anything, you know, and you pose that question, you know, how far is too far, and what are some principles that you've really learned in meditating on this chapter?
My favorite ultimately comes from St. John Paul II, but the way I can sum it up is any physical gesture, physical affection should be a sign of a relationship that already exists on mm-hmm. other foundations, not the cause of your attachment to each other. So mm-hmm. if you meet someone and you're on a first date and you start passionately kissing, mm-hmm. you're going to feel very attached to that person, but it doesn't have that firm foundation of really knowing who is this person and building trust and seeing if he or she has virtue. So he says, we're, as embodied creatures, we're supposed to show signs of our relationship with each other through the body, but it should flow from an existing reality. So physical affection being the sign of an existing relationship, not the cause of the attachment. And that helps people kind of have boundaries at each stage of the relationship. So if you think about it that way, you might think, okay, on the first few dates, when we may not even be exclusive, maybe we're seeing other people, whatever, is it appropriate to do anything more than maybe a brief hug? Mm-hmm. Probably not. That's the advice I received, like at most, just a quick goodbye hug. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't even comfortable with that, that's fine. But then as you are boyfriend and girlfriend, you're, you know, discerning becoming family, maybe gestures that you would do with your family and your very close mm-hmm. friends become more appropriate. Maybe, you know, my husband's Mexican, so there's a lot of kissing on the cheek all the time with all the family members, right? And so that's very chaste and very appropriate in that context. Mm-hmm. And then for me and my husband, I requested that we not kiss on the lips until we were engaged. Mm-hmm. That's not a rule that the church has, but for me it was helpful to just mark, okay, now we're in a new stage. Now we've decided to get married, and it kept me from getting kind of carried away with it, and I'd had an experience previously of just kind of kissing too much too soon, and it messed with my ability to discern clearly because I felt so attached to that person. So that can be a way to, you know, think through the different stages and think about what your boundaries should be for each stage. And then, of course, there's some things that are just for marriage, and we kind of know what those are. We don't have to talk too much about it on TV, but, you know.
And I've heard that a lot too, well, in books, you know, people writing about marriage, but like this relationship goes sexual before they get married. It's mm-hmm. like it blurs the discernment. It even hinders the intimacy that we should have, because the power, the overwhelming aspect mm-hmm. of the physical intimacy, we don't do the emotional intimacy or much, or take time to get to know. But I never thought of it just in terms of like sometimes touch. I mean, there's a relative aspect to it, how people mm-hmm. respond to things, but you know, oxytocin, the bonding hormone, is released and all this, and then when you do break up, it's harder.
Yes.
I think especially for the woman. And you quote Thomas in here that, you know, just judging these things, these touches, they're not sinful themselves, he says, but if they're done, you know, if done without lustful pleasure, but they can be mortally sinful if they lead someone to consent to lustful pleasure, you know, venereal pleasure, we call it as well. And I thought that's a simple distinction. Like, basically, am I being aroused in some way and things like that? So, and it's relative. You know, we have to guard our hearts, know what is a temptation for us. And also to just to focus on, is this a touch that's giving or is it taking?
Right? Yes.
I thought that was a great distinction to make.
Yes. As my husband helped me a lot with that chapter. We were engaged at the time and we were kind of wrestling with, are we being as chaste as we could mm-hmm. be? Or is there, you know, there's some temptations and some difficulties here. And, I'll be honest that we struggled with that. And he said, yeah, there's a switch that flips. You can kind of tell there's a kiss that's just a kiss and it's affection and it's nothing more. And then there's a kiss that's kind of like, ooh, it's hard to stop. We're going to keep going. Right. Some people would say it's the distinction between a kiss and making out, you know, maybe making out is really for when you're married, because it tends to cause that arousal, but there is a, different levels of it.
Well, again, we'll just close with this. I think it's such a vital topic to help our young people, especially to get married, to have kids, right? And you told me a shocking statistic that the decline, the percentage decline in the priesthood was less drastic in 1971 to like...
2021.
Everybody knows that the vocations there have declined. Marriage has been a greater drop.
Yes, percentage-wise. It was a steeper drop of Catholic weddings per year than ordinations per year, even though it's not as talked about as much.
Yeah. Right. So we need to be talking about it. We need to encourage people. It's a beautiful vocation, and you're living it well. So, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again.
Default to yes. That's what she said. You know, to say, give God some permission, some yeses, to see, as you mentioned, you know, we're called to marry someone we actually meet.
Yeah.
So we get out, that's what she said.
Yeah.
We have to get out there and meet people, you know, if we feel called to marriage, and to say yes. Now, you always want to be prudent, you know, if there's any reason that this person's unsafe or something, you know, you don't want to do that. But to give a person a chance, and as I think too, it's like we kind of learn more about discernment as we meet more people. You're discerning things.
Oh, yeah.
If I visit different religious communities, I'm growing in that path of how to discern as well. So.
And I think too, the whole maybe dating landscape has changed, because y'all talked on the show how, you know, you go from meeting people in person to now there's a lot of online dating, you know, where you might meet somebody who's out of state and all that. And I've seen a lot of cases where a lot of that does work out. You know, there's a chemistry, and I guess people start talking to each other before they meet. And they know something about the other person.
Yeah.
But there are, and like she said in the show, you know, the resources are out there. You know, and a lot of times parents, siblings, you know, they introduce us to people that sometimes we don't even know why they're introducing us to another person.
Right,
and they
right.
see that, well, this person has a good quality or a good fit and all that. And like you said, you know, we have to be open to those signs and graces that God gives us.
Right. And to pray, to ask God for guidance, and but to take a step out there, and for men to step up and ask a woman out, you know, and it might be in a group, it might be just to get coffee, but for them to take some initiative and pray, ask God for strength and help and do it.
And I think her own story is actually very moving in the sense that, you know, she met somebody that initially she didn't feel connected to, but later on that door opened and she goes, you know what, this is a very good person. Why not?
Right, right.
You know, and I think that happens a lot in our lives, that we sometimes close the door to somebody without ever giving them a chance. And then later on, we may look back and say, you know, I made a mistake there.
Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. We didn't have her husband on, Enrique, but they have a child now. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful they were all here in the studio. It was beautiful to see them living the life, you know, living that life, that married life. And it's gonna have challenges. Life has challenges, has difficulties. But as we mentioned before in the previous show, you know, it's a sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
God's gonna give us grace to persevere in whatever vocation we're doing and are called to. So we have to depend on Him, trust in Him, and follow Him. And with marriage, it's a natural, it's instituted by God. It's a natural reality. And there's a great gift in this, that there's a human flourishing in that. As you live that out, you know, the man and the woman bless each other with their complementary differences. And to bring forth human life is just an unimaginable gift to share in the creation of another human life, to procreate. So it's beautiful. That's what we want to do with this show, is to encourage young people about the greatness of marriage. It's worth it. It's worth it, you know, and to get out and, if you feel called to it, to take some steps, you know, to get married, to find a person you can love and share your life with. So may our Heavenly Father shed His light upon you. May He give you His grace and pour His Holy Spirit into your heart to strengthen you you. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. We'll see you next week on Life on the Rock.
Jesus, Jesus, why?